Here we go, Ben.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, everyone. Good morning to all of you. I look forward to our dialogue. What I propose to do this morning is to share with you a practical example of how we can use communication, social mobilization, and leadership to transform communities. And I'll take off from what Henry Moseley talked about the households as the primary producers of health. The first thing I'd like to do is share with you a series of beautiful paintings that a friend of mine sent me some time back. These paintings were made by a Hungarian artist by the name of István Bányai, published it in a book for children, although I think his ultimate audience was adult like us. And his paintings were so beautiful that I always use this in my presentations. It made me ask myself three things. Is there only one way to see things? Is there only one truth? And how can we develop multiple perspectives? Enjoy the paintings. Thank you. Well, it's probably the most important slide that I share with you this morning. It's a simple question. Where do leaders operate? And what you have there is a series of concentric circles. Easy to do looks difficult. That's impossible and beyond imagination. Well, I grew up in a world of telegrams, where somebody will come to your house and deliver a bicycle and deliver a piece of paper with 25 words. So when I was a kid, if somebody told me that sometime in the future, people will carry telephones in their pockets, can call anywhere in the world, send texts, use it as a camera or as a video clip, maybe they could come up with a version that could all that. Well, I'd say that's beyond imagination. And yet we have that here. So when I was a kid, if somebody told me that sometime in the future, people will write letters to each other in something called a computer, press a button, to be received anywhere in the world, practically nothing, I would say that's beyond imagination. So I think leaders operate in what is difficult, what's impossible, and what is beyond imagination. So we need to appreciate leadership at all levels in the health system, not just at the top. When Henry and I were developing this leadership course that we teach together, we had to review the literature, and I was surprised to find out that much of the literature on the leadership was written by the military. Leadership is very important to them. Their leaders die in combat, and they cannot hire from the private sector and pull somebody and say, you're now a colonel or general and all that. So they nurture the leaders from below and all that, and they have a lot of leadership schools. But one thing that intrigued me was to discover that in most armies, they use the word leader for the smallest unit. The smallest unit in the army is a squad, consists of 11 soldiers. And half a squad is called a squad leader. The next bigger unit is a platoon, consists of 4 squads. And the head of a platoon is called a platoon leader. But the next bigger units, they're not called leaders anymore. They're called company commanders, battalion commanders, brigade commanders or division commanders. And I thought it was very intriguing that they would use leader, the word leader, for the smallest unit. And I think it's because they appreciate that that's where it really counts. That's where the action happens. And the implication for us is the importance of leadership, not just at the top, but at all levels, but most especially down below. The third point I'd like to share with you is leaders go where there are no maps. They go to uncharted territories, beyond evidence-based thinking. And so a few years ago, what I would like as a background to what I'm going to show to you this morning is that I was invited to go to Geneva and make a presentation to a Global Fund Mechanism meeting. we're going to make a case of why communication and leadership and social mobilization is important. And I was advised very strongly to bring a lot of empirical data to show that communication and social mobilization works. And I reflected on that, and I thought, look, all the evidence available in the web, you know, our scholarly journals and all the reference books that we have, what more can I add? So I thought maybe the problem's not evidence-based, but the kind of mindset that we have. So I didn't bring any evidence. And what I did was in front of all the medical health professionals working on tuberculosis, I simply asked the question, how many of you agree that households should know about the symptoms of TB? Everybody raised their hands. How many of you believe that people should know that TB is curable, that TB treatment is free? Everybody raised their hands. How many of you believe that people should know how TB can be prevented? And I said, how do you propose to achieve this without communication and social mobilization? So out of that, came up with this thinking inspired by John Wyon's public health is like a three-legged stool, and each leg is important. And one leg could say is disease-oriented, another leg is services-oriented, and another leg is community-oriented. So we need all three. We can have a two-legged stool or one-legged stool. But what I thought, where communication and leadership comes in, is that maybe it's the base, the one that connects all of these things. So my presentation this morning concerned DOT strategy. I think everybody's familiar with that. And my main point, we would benefit significantly from a systems, a multidisciplinary, multi-sectoral approach to DOTs. First, let me tell you about the story of the six blind men and the elephant. I think many of you may be familiar with that. There were six blind men. They didn't know how an elephant looked like, so they went to the zoo. And each one touched a different part. And one said the elephant's like a spear after touching the tusk. Another said, oh, elephant's like a rope after touching the tail. So they argued loud and strong. All of them were right, but also all of them were wrong. But I thought that the storyteller had a little arrogance in that sense that he thought he understood what the elephant system is like. And a wise man said, wait, we laugh at the six blind men, but we who have eyesight fail to appreciate that the forest is part of the elephant. So here's the DOT strategy, the approach that I took. I didn't question it. I didn't say anything. Okay, this is what we do. And the DOT strategy consists of five elements: advocacy, quality DOT services, drug supply, monitoring, and treatment. Everybody understand what it is. The goal, number of cases drop long term. How well is the DOT strategy working? Very well in some countries, mixed in others. Some say the number of TB cases dropping, some say it's increasing, maybe due to better detection and all that. But when I look at the data, I thought that advocacy and detection is very weak. It suggests that there's a need to improve things, and this weakness strategic as it dampens overall effort. The latest data that I saw is that only 61% cases detected worldwide against Millennium Development Goal of 70%. And there are very large disparities. Africa, 46%, Europe, 52%, Mediterranean, 52%. Now, WHO recognized that DOT's expansion accounts for most of the growth in detection. And there was a time 5 years ago when WHO estimated that even if there is 100% DOTs, we probably won't go beyond 50% detection. I'm glad we've gone beyond that. But it's almost like we're detecting more cases. It's like selling more cars because you're opening more dealerships, not necessarily because each dealership is doing. The second point is treatment could improve, certainly. We're close to target, 84.7% cure against 85. But the outcome may be dampened by the fact that we have low detection rates. And there are growing concerns from MDR-TB and lower quality of services as the program expands. Now, the technique that I use is that instead of presenting evidence, I ask the question, are revisions in wording the DOT strategy better? What is the difference? In the first case, we go back, you have providers detecting potential cases and diagnose correctly, providers ensure correct treatment regimen, I simply changed the wording to providers, community, and households team up to detect potential cases and diagnose correctly. Providers, community, and household team up to encourage. I said, anybody would object to that? No, they like that. I said, well, if you accept that, then we bring in communication and social mobilization. There is now justification for that. And we could see that communication can influence advocacy, communication can influence social mobilization, and vice versa. Now, developing this outcome map, I said, if we have communication, then the households can learn about TB symptoms, transmission, and treatment. The government, community, and households can team up to eliminate stigma of TB, and people with symptoms can seek health care. So looking at the further development of this model, we could see how social mobilization can contribute. Community works with government and households to eliminate TB in the community. Community allocates resources and nurtures the appropriate environment to eliminate TB in the community. And again, government and households integrate into the culture appropriate health values and practices. And what do we mean by that? Well, I hope 30 years from now we will no longer have immunization campaigns. And why is that? Because every parent knows the value of immunization as part of the culture. And 30 years from now we will no longer have nutrition campaigns. And why is that? Because every parent knows the value of nutrition and teach their children. So I introduced a concept of a TB-free community. There was a big reaction to that. What do you mean by TB-free community? It's not possible. Well, I said, no active untreated cases of TB detected in the last 3 years. I said, oh yeah, that's fine. That's okay. That seems possible. No deaths from TB in the community in the last 3 years. And yeah, they accepted that. So what is the advantage of thinking about TB-free communities? Well, we could make a comparison between TB-free communities and TB communities with TB and find out. We could develop a color-coded map that shows prevalence of TB and be able to allocate resources more efficiently and more effectively. Because TB transmission is by proximity, it's logical to use a geographic-based strategy. And also, designation of a TB-free community gives a clear sense of victory. It's highly motivational, I say. Our TB community is free from TB. And Mexico adopted this and came up with a white flag strategy where communities that are TB-free can raise a white flag. And everybody would say, yeah, we are proud of that. It's easier to understand the number of cases per 100,000, which is not meaningful at community level. Now, Henry Mosley talked about the zero maternal mortality and said, you ask communities, they don't want any. You know, when we talk to communities and try to explain to them our usual approach of reducing maternal mortality by 5%, and tell them that's what our goal is, they come back with a very simple question for which we don't have an answer, maybe you do. They say, who will be in the 5%? Who will we save? And who we will not? So this kind of thinking and think would help us. What did I do on this? I tried to develop a case study, although this is post hoc. I look at Vietnam and try to overlay what they have done according to this outcome map. And what I saw is that there seems to be a good fit about the activities that people have done and the kind of results that they have. 80% cases detected, 92% completed treatment. Indonesia is also doing well, not as good as Vietnam, but there seems to be a logic to this systems approach that I have proposed. The other thing that I did was came up with indicators for each of the boxes so that we could measure. And so in a way, this map, what I call an outcome map, could be something that could help us develop our interventions and strategies. People would know how to measure, as well as the kind of interventions that people would want to consider in helping address many of these issues. So what have we done here? Well, we come up with an outcome map. And an outcome map is something that you're saying, this is what we would like to happen. Don't ask me for evidence. This is what I would like to do. Educate people about TB symptoms, tell them that TB can be treated, and tell them what they can do to help address this. So what is the benefits of this COMDAT approach? Less jargon. All of those boxes in the map are actors. They're not ideas. government providers, communities, and households, lays out an overall strategic picture, provides practical way to plan, implement, monitor, and evaluate, suggests a multidisciplinary and multi-sectoral team approach, and helps ensure everyone is on the same page. And why? Because together everyone achieves more. So my question, we would benefit significantly from a systems approach to DOTS. Our choice, COM, DOTS, DOTS, COM, DOTS, COM, or DOTS alone. So let me end with this. Public health is like a three-legged stool. Each leg is important, but we need communication and leadership. Now, let me end with this question. If you're a farmer, what do you do if a cow falls in a ditch? A good answer is to get the cow out of the ditch. You find out why the cow fell in the ditch, find out how you can prevent other cows from falling in the ditch. That seems to be a logical response. What do you do when thousands of cows fall in the ditch? And then obviously, the original answer no longer applies, because as we get one cow out of the ditch, another cow falls, and we just keep getting cows out of the ditch, and more cows are falling in the ditch. But our situation is much, much more complicated. There is no one ditch. There are many ditches, and there are thousands of cows falling in the ditches. It's not just HIV/AIDS, it's malaria, it's hepatitis, it's tuberculosis, it's cancer. And we need to change our way of thinking to systems. Thank you very much.